Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here is your host of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Millennial Dentist. Got Dr. Payray in the house. Yes. Holsinger here.
Good to be here, y'all.
We're going to talk about a pretty exciting topic tonight. We've had a lot of questions and comments that got emailed to us about different stuff. So thanks for those. We hope to kind of get to those over the next couple weeks. One that kind of keeps coming up specifically from Corey Cloud from New York. So thanks, Corey, for sending us a question. Is he talks about student loans and he says, hey, guys, love the show. Y'all talk about all these great things, but what about student loans? How do we get overcome the large number of loans that we take out and have to have for dental school? And that's a great question. And so what we want to do in tonight's episode is basically tackle that a little bit head on, talk about what our loan options are. Do you refinance? Do you not? What does it look like to pay them down early with versus saving? That sort of thing. So the first thing we're going to do is kind of give you the state of ours, because we want to have kind of full disclosure. And in that disclosure, we'll say that you should take this as a grain of salt. This is three guys drinking beer on a Wednesday, so consult your financial advisor.
Definitely.
But these are our thoughts, and we've done a lot of research and spent a lot of time trying to figure out what's the best thing to do for ours, so we want to share that with you. Payman?
So, I didn't have any loans from undergrad. So, when I started dental school, I pretty much took out as much as I could, yet I also asked for more. As max. So I maxed out, it's called Grad Plus, I believe. And I even, after I got the Grad Plus max, I was still, okay, so my lifestyle in dental school was kind of.
I love that you took out the max.
I took out the max.
I want to take out more.
Then I found out, okay, this is not going to be enough still, because I can't, this is not going to be, like, you know, remember we had a house in the Mount Island. We had a very beautiful house.
Payman wasn't roughing it through dental school.
Let's anyway, so I asked for more. They're like, okay, well, if you want more, you have to write down, like, specifically what you want it more for, like, what exactly. So I put out like my
vodka.
Board, like, yeah, my board exam. Like, hey, this cost me this much. Anyways, I ended up with $283,000 after 4 years. And I was in a state of student, meaning I could have got away with 130. Yet I got $283,000.
Oh, well, you got to pay to live. I mean, you can't.
That's fantastic.
You can't be eating ramen every night. Sure. You know what I mean?
So now I love this, because I called Soli here about a couple hours ago. I was like, hey, what are you talking about? And like, student loans. And I'm like, well, I don't know if I could help you much. But he's like, no, come on. Because we need somebody who really doesn't understand how to spend money. So this is honestly, it's poor judgment. Back in dental school, I borrowed as much as I could, but I shouldn't have, because if I didn't borrow this much, I really didn't need.
So you're not alone in that. So I think that hopefully maybe we can take some stuff from tonight.
Sure.
Okay, Holsinger?
Yeah. When I got out in 2010, which I got in the dental school at the most, like the worst time, because student loan rates went up from like 2.5 or like 3% to 6.8 when I started.
Wow.
And so I was like, well, thank you. Welcome to dental school, Daniel. And so when I got out after 4 years, I took out the max Stafford. I didn't take any private loans out. So at the end, I took 40 a year. So I was at 160 when I got out. After that, I mean, I lived okay. I mean, I didn't like spend an exuberant amount of money on things. I mean, I always stayed with roommates and the split money in a house, split the rent. But then I started paying back a little bit, got on. Well, we're going to talk about different ways you can pay it back. But and then I went into residency 3 years later, and I got to defer them, which sounds great.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
but
yeah.
Then the interest adds up again. And so now, when I got out of residency, I was paying on it the entire time. I would pay my interest while I was in residency.
Basically, you haven't made a dent, have you?
I was at 165 after residency.
Oh, you went up.
Oh, yeah, went up.
Wow.
Because I was just paying interest for a little while there. And so now I've knocked it down to about 151.
But you're going to be a rich piece of house.
I hope so. We'll see.
Okay, sweet. Well, so I'm kind of, I guess, the oddball out here. I'm very fortunate and lucky that I have no student loans. As we've talked about before, being fifth generation dentist, I'm very fortunate that everyone except for the first has had their dental school paid for by the previous dentist. So dad had his dental school paid for by his dad, and he paid for mine. So I'm very fortunate to have that.
That's great.
But with that being said, I think I can come to the conversation a little bit tonight strictly from a standpoint that currently I have over $1 million in debt. I may have the most debt actually at the table. Now that I've officially bought into the practice for like $500,000 and then have, you know, our mortgage and a couple other little oddball things. So hopefully that at least gives me a little bit of credibility and entry to the table. So
got to pay that hot tub note, right?
Yes. The old Craigslist hot tub note. So, okay. So let's start the conversation with this. I want to talk about kind of what you've both done with your student loans since. You kind of touched a bit. Holsinger, why don't you take the lead on this? What did you do? What program did you go into with your loans right out before you went to residency, and currently where are you at?
So coming out of dental school for me, I joined with a group called Graduate Leverage. And they had some good sound advice. They helped me consolidate my loans and age them so I could get income-based repayment, which is phenomenal because I think my original payment was like $300 a month or something crazy. I mean, it was really cheap. So like at that time when I didn't have any money saved up, I mean, it was great just to have that liquidity and be able to have cash to go ahead and be ready to make purchases. Because my ultimate goal when I got out of dental school was to buy into a practice. And you talk to all these different places that give you advice, and they say, you need to have cash on hand, don't pay off your loans. And so I was just saving that money in cash, just, I wouldn't say piles of it, but I had a little bit in my bank account. And that's where my money was going. I wasn't paying extra on my loans. I was just keeping that $300 a month payment, basically. I think it might have been 170. I'll have to go back and look, but I mean, it was really cheap.
We were talking about a guy the other day, it was IBR too, and it was like the same thing. It was like $250. And he was like, that's less than people spend on dinner you know, sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it sounded great, but at the time I didn't realize it, but all this interest was starting to be added, because at the end of the year, they take all this extra interest that you have left over that you haven't paid, and they basically add it to your principal. And so that's why my loans were going up from like the 160 to the 165. And at one point, I remember dropping $20,000 on it a year and a half out of dental school.
Wow.
I was like, I'm gonna make a dent in this. Nope, I didn't. It just came back up. And so did that. There was no refinance options at that time. There was some government regulations that got rid of them all at that period. Went into residency, deferred them. I tried to pay off my interest while I was in residency so I didn't have to add it to my principal. So they didn't go up too high. Since I got out, I haven't.
From a residency standpoint, do y'all have a substantial salary, or are you having to pay things? Do you not pay things? Do you get money? How does that work?
Yeah, so with pediatrics, pediatric dental residency, it's associated with a hospital, at least our program was. So it's also GME, which is basically what runs most medical residencies across the country. They're hospital based. And so I got like $40,000 a year. So, I mean, plenty enough to live on, but not really to pay down your loans at that point.
That's pretty much average right now. I feel like $40,000, because I had another friend of mine who just got into pedo, and they offered him the same thing at UT.
Okay.
Yeah.
And AGD also, AGD GPR.
It's kind of the same thing.
It's the same. Yeah.
And some of these like Lutheran programs, they pay a lot more. They pay like in the 70s. So, I mean, they pay really well, but they worked a lot harder than I did in residency. So.
Okay. So then now currently you're in a direct loan repayment now, just like it was like a mortgage, basically with a rate, with a fixed rate over a time period.
Yeah. So I think my payment is like $1,700 a month is what I'm paying right now. And so
you're still at 6.8%.
6.8%. So basically at the end of the year, about half of it goes towards interest and half of it goes towards principal is what I've kind of calculated.
Perfect.
So
okay. Payment, give me yours. Do you know what you were?
Okay. So when I got out, I realized it's $283,000. Then from our friend's Facebook page, the group of graduate students in our class, they all started talking about refinancing and consolidating loans, and everybody had idea like, hey, go to this place and that place. And I started researching. I found SoFi, SOFI, social finance. I think that's what they're for. I looked them up, and along with another company that you have it up there, DRB, is it?
Yep.
Okay, so I had researched into it and found out that they gave me a better rate. So I had 6.8% for most of that $283,000. There was 6.8%, or some of them were actually 7.3% interest. So when I put them all together, after 3-4 months after graduation, SoFi gave me a deal with 5.7% for 20 years, And oh, that's great. Fixed for 20 years, and that's $2,000 even, almost. $2,000.
Okay. Five. Great.
Yeah, and that's what I'm paying for the past two and a half years.
Awesome. Yeah. And then mine are probably right about, I think, 4.5% fixed on 10 years for the practice and then 30 years on the house. So, you know, a good substantial amount of money there. Probably about, I think a mortgage is like $2,600 through the bank and through SunTrust. And then our Bank of America is who financed the practice loan. And I think my payment on that's like, maybe like $4,000 a month or something like that.
Since you brought that up, I'm going to say this because I know a lot of people want to get a new practice built and they want to see how much they get offered. Usually Bank of America, they have a very good system. It's called Practice Solutions.
Yeah, that's who I dealt with.
They offered me 4.2% for 12 years of trying to think of how much, $550,000 or $575,000. I'm not sure exactly how much, but that's how much I borrowed, $550,000 or $575,000, and they offered it to me 4.2%.
That's pretty good, yeah.
For 12 years.
That's great.
Well, and I'd like to talk about that and what the loan that I took out with SunTrust, because it was another dental loan for our mortgage. It was pretty cool at some point, but we don't have time for that tonight. So, okay,
I did the same thing for my mortgage. I got a doctor's loan for 4%.
Which I think both of us are pretty pleased with. So one night we'll talk about that. Okay, so basically, if the first question you got to ask yourself is with your student loans is, are you going to try to seek loan forgiveness? Okay, because basically what that means is that after a certain amount of time, can the government forgive my loans? The multiple ways that you can do that are and y'all kind of chime in too here, is the primarily one is working for government health, public health, that sort of thing to get credit towards your loans, or military or something like that to forgive your loans. Sure. So I think first and foremost, that's what you got to decide if you're willing to go into that route. We're going to have at least one or two of our buddies on who are in the military at some point talk about how they basically did that. They got all their loans for free because they went back to the military. Mm-hmm. Or there's some that work for public health, and so that over years they get them back. If you're not doing that, then you got to start to look at what are your options for paying it back. You did IVR right at the beginning, and you pretty much went straight into refinancing, correct, Payman?
I did. Okay. Yeah, I went straight to refinance.
The benefit of the IVR is the low payments, and a lot of this conversation is going to stem around cash flow, because
what's IVR?
Income-based repayment.
Oh, yeah.
So basically what IVR is, and that's a good question for those listening, you're like, what is that? Basically, what the way IVR works is, so there's PSLF, which is Public Service Loan Forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And if you work for public health, you can look more into this. So basically, you're going to be able to get your loans forgiven over a certain period of time by working for public health. Income-based repayment basically means that based off your income, you pay loans down. So if you only make 20 grand, well, you're not going to have a $2,000 a month loan payment. Okay, but if you make 100 grand or 200 grand, your loan repayment is going to go up based off how you're making. So it's really good when you A, start working, or B, you're in residency where you have a low repayment. They've come out with a couple of different ones, pay and repay, and some different ones that kind of are adjusted to IVR that people can look into. But honestly, the majority of this conversation for us is going to focus on A, refinancing, and then what you do past that. Because my thing, and y'all can kind of bounce off this with me if you want, but I'm a huge believer in that if you're not going to get your loans forgiven, then you need to refinance. And Holsinger, I'll kind of, you know, the question that comes to you is, so why didn't you refinance? And we've talked about this a little bit, but I want our listeners to know, okay, so, you know, you've been out of school for a couple of years and you went back to residency, and now you've been out for 2 years. So why haven't you refinanced?
Yes, when I got out of dental school, there wasn't really any programs that were available to refinance.
Millennial.
Yeah, so I just consolidated, and then went through those programs, and then I deferred when I went to residency. When I got out, then they were just starting to come into play, like SoFi and DRB, and there's multiple other programs. And so I haven't refinanced because talking to some banks and everything on how I'm getting a practice loan, because I'm currently in an office that I plan on buying into as a partner here in the hopefully the next couple months is nice. The plan. And so in order to not because I wanted to get the lower the rate, the shorter the term you have to repay it on. Okay.
Correct.
So if you want to get like a five 5-year payback. I mean, you get a low rate, but
like
you're
4% interest rate. Yeah,
yeah. But my payment would have gone up to like almost $4,000 a month or something like that. And so looking at just by the rates and everything, I didn't want to refinance until after I had acquired or got financing for a practice loan, just so it didn't ruin my cash flow right there. So when the bank was looking at it, they could say like, can this guy afford for us to loan him $1 million to buy into a practice or something
sure,
like that?
Sure,
you know
sure,
what I mean?
Sure.
So, so that's one thing that's held me back from refinancing. I think it's great and I want to do it. It's just not on my timetable right now.
So, and my thing to you is, okay, the first thing I think people got to figure out, and you too, is kind of, okay, what does it look like though? From, I mean, how much is refinancing really going to hurt your ability to get a loan slash your credit score?
Does it hurt credit to find out? Like, can you just find out without hurting your credit to know?
No. So if you're going to refinance, they're going to run a credit score.
So that was a soft inquiry or a hard inquiry?
No, it's going to be a hard inquiry. You're going to get knocked. But at the end of the day, like that's okay. Like you got to realize that. Like,
sure. Yeah. You got to do it.
This is a total caveat, but if you're in dental school and you don't have a credit card and you never had a credit card, go open up a credit card, listen to another podcast later in a couple of weeks where we talk about credit cards, and you need mm-hmm. to be starting to put stuff on a credit card and make payments to start building your credit score.
Yes, definitely.
That was something that hurt me a little bit, was having a poor credit history. And so if you're not using credit, you have a crappy credit history, which is like stupid because it's like, well, if I don't need credit, why am I being punished for it? But that's a little bit of a caveat. So to answer your question, yes, it's going to hurt your credit score a little bit, but in the long term, it's okay. And I think that, you know, what you're saying is basically with the practice being on the horizon, you do kind of have to think, okay, is it the chicken or the egg? You know, do I buy into the practice first or do I refinance, whatnot? You know, I probably would have said, okay, well, you probably, in hindsight, I would have encouraged you to refinance right after you got out of school.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Right?
Because
now you've had 2 years to recoup any of that. At this point, you're like within months of trying to buy in, you're probably right. You probably don't want to refinance at this point.
Yeah.
You know, the big question, okay, so payment, and you, you know, fortunately, you just kind of went with what people were talking about and doing it. And so you've gotten yourself down to a much nicer rate over a 20-year term.
It's easier because I had a bunch of different loans from school and they were like different categories, you know, and they put them all together and it's just one person that you pay and it's $2,000 a month and it doesn't seem to be going down.
So here's what thing I want to talk about. So basically, I think one of the common questions that people are going to have, right? So I think one question, and I talk to people about this all the time, is their biggest thing with refinancing is now all of a sudden, because the big negative to refinancing, right, is now you're on the hook. Mm-hmm. You know, payment, your loans can't be forgiven.
Right.
Did you know that?
Right. Yeah,
so,
I knew.
That's you signed up for a lower interest rate, but like you got to pay them all that money. Mm-hmm. I think that's frankly a really crappy excuse because one, are your loans, are they really going to get forgiven? Like, are you really going to like wait 25 years and
see, that's
work
to
and
me,
do it?
I feel like you're asking government to help you. First, I mean, if you're a dentist, I don't think a lot of doctors are thinking to get income based. I don't know.
I don't think the government's going to help us, right? Like,
I think that's
pretty crazy. Like, if you're going to wait on the government, like, really, you think they're going to come bail out a bunch of physicians and dentists and lawyers and whoever else is listening to this that like has a bunch of student loans? Like,
and I think that's one reason why I waited, because I was like, because everybody was talking about
scary,
the next
right?
bubble to bust. It's the student loan bubble. I mean, you have the housing market. Of what year was that? 2008, 2000. Yeah. I don't know. Big Short, that movie. Well,
yeah.
And so I was like, man, they're going to bust. Like, the government's going to take back my loans. This is going to be great.
I just don't see that.
So, yeah, I feel like I'm over there on the hill looking at the sun, waiting for the second coming of the Christ.
Well, no, I think you're right. And so I think a lot of people sit there and they're like, oh, what do I do? And smart people are sitting there. I'm like, well, as you're doing that each year, you're paying more in interest than you need to be because you're afraid to take the bullet on that. Because it's just, and ultimately, like, this is good debt. I mean, this is the debt that's allowed us to do what we do and make a good living.
Sure.
So like you can afford to pay it back. It's not that big, like, you know, and be like, well, this guy didn't have student loans. Well, crap. I think I have enough loans at the point that the concept's still the same. Mm-hmm. It's the same principle.
Mm-hmm.
The deductibles though, like for the taxes, as far as how much I paid, the like $24,000, how much you pay for student loans, right? Because I pay $2,000 a month. That's for 12 months. That's $24,000. But when I do the taxes, they only take, certain portion of that, not the 24,000, that's not deductible.
Yeah, I think once you hit an amount where your income is like over 120 or 115, you can't write off any of the interest.
I kind of want to point out all the scenarios for everybody that hears that they can relate to. for like, so, cause some people, I thought myself, cause this was stupid, but I didn't know that I thought when I'm paid $24,000 at the end of the year, maybe
you think it's all tax deductible. Yeah.
But then I found out, oh, wait,
that's not. Well, and I want to talk about that in that when you're paying down more, cause that's a big question. People think, okay, well, yeah, this interest is good cause I'm getting to write it off. Well, you're really not once you, cause honestly, if you're having this kind of debt, then because you went to some professional school and you're going to probably make an income that weeds you out of the interest off. Right. Whatnot. So I'm a big believer. Cause so you graduate, you got all these student loans. You know, I don't think the IVR is bad, which is where you're paying a super low amount to kind of figure out what you're doing, kind of figure out what your plan is, that sort of thing.
And I think after like 20 years or 30 years of paying it on time, like automatic debit or something like that, I think the rest of your balance is like forgiven on IVR.
It's 25 years.
Is it 25 years?
But you have to realize that if you pay it on 25 years, that you probably aren't going to have. Right. Like the balance is not really, you're really not forgiving it. Like that's what's funny. Like if you actually look at it based off your income's going up, like if you're making $400,000 in years 15 to 20, you're really probably paying off. You're not forgiving much. So it's a little bit of a catch 22 on that. If that makes sense.
Unless you have a cash only practice.
Yes.
Crowns for 600.
Okay. So that's kind of testing, you know, questions about that. Thoughts on that?
So IBR, when you say income-based payment, now how many people qualify? Like, what are the jobs that people can get out of school and find out if this is income-based or not?
Like, so anybody can do income-based and repay and all those. These are all government programs that you can
government
choose.
Yes. Programs.
And if you want to learn the most about, and really any of this, now I would say anybody that wants to know more about their loans, go right now to thewhitecoatinvestor.com. It's probably the biggest resource, and I will talk about it over and over and over on this podcast. That's been for me.
There's a book
he wrote a book.
Read a book about
it. It's called The White Coat or How to Get a Leg Up on Wall Street. So what the book's called, but
the book
forum.
The White Coat Investor.
Yeah. So it's, but he's an emergency physician that basically got screwed over on a real estate deal and was like, we're smart enough to figure this out. And I agree. I think if you're a professional student, if you're an attorney, veterinarian, nurse or dentist or doctor, or whatever you are, that and you've gotten this education, you can take the time to read a book and figure out what's the best refinancing route for you.
We're gonna have all these links for every episode. We're gonna have links attached.
Yeah,
we'll
definitely link this.
Everybody can go online and look at these links.
So that's the big question: the loan forgiveness. And then I guess the other question people get then is, what do you do?
How much do I pay a month? For example, I know I'm good for 20 years.
Can you pass me a beer?
$20,000. I'll pay $20,000. I pay $2,000 a month for 20 years and I'm good. Now, what if I want to reduce it? Is there a calculator that can kind of instantly tell me, hey, I want to pay this much a month. Would it help me or not help me? Like, would that benefit?
Yes. Like, so that's a phenomenal question. And this is probably where I want to spend the most time of the night on, because ultimately I think what people are going to find is they're going to get to a point where they're probably going to refinance their student loans. They're going to consolidate and refinance because honestly, long term, I think that's really the best route for anybody, because basically that makes your loan just like it is like a mortgage or a practice loan, whatever. You got a loan over a set amount of period with a fixed rate or an adjustable rate, and you can decide whether you want fixed or adjustable. There's plenty of reading material on that, especially on the White Coat Investor, what to do and that sort of thing. But the question then becomes is, okay, now my money is increasing. I'm getting paid. Mm-hmm. We've been out a couple of years. Our salaries are getting bigger. We're making more money. What do we do with the money? You know, I hear every single day, I want to pay down my loans, pay down my loans, pay down my loans. I'm tired of getting this debt. I mean, you were talking about earlier, Holsinger. You
know, oh, yeah. I want to pay off my loans.
And you're literally like, I want to pay off my loans. And I'm like, your loans are a great thing. So so the question payment, that's a great question. So now what people, because people are like, I'm going to target it and I'm going to pay my loans down in 3 years or whatever. And they're going to put all this money. So my question to them and to you is right now is, what are you doing from a retirement standpoint?
Retirement standpoint, I'm not even thinking about retirement.
Bingo. And this is why this is going to be a great episode just for you personally. Yeah. Okay. So, you're a sole proprietor. Have you set up, or are you a sole proprietor LLC?
Yeah.
What are you?
Yeah. LLC, PLC.
So you're a PLC. So have you thought about setting up any sort of retirement plan for
not
your PLC?
Yet. I would see with all the loans and everything that I've got with the bank and the business loan and the student loan. When somebody told me, oh, well, how much money are you going to start saving and for retirement? I'm like, look at the loans I've got to pay back first. So I guess the priority in my mind was never think of even retirement. Even though I have a lot of friends personal finance and financial advisor that they keep telling me, hey, you need to start thinking about the retirement, investing.
Holsinger?
I have a couple things going on that, well, from the previous episode, I opened an HSA. So yep. that was good. So I'm going to start putting money away in HSA.
What's HSA for?
Listen to episode 3, Pavan.
Okay, cool.
No, it's a health savings account.
Health savings account.
Okay. Yeah, health savings account. And so I'm going to start doing that. And then I've started a Roth IRA probably about 4 or 5 years ago. I'm given the max contribution of that.
$5,500.
Yeah, $5,500. And so I've been just contributing to that. And then now, once your income hits a certain level, you can't do a Roth. So so I've started doing a traditional IRA with a backdoor into a Roth. And so I have a financial advisor that helps me do that. Other than that, the dental gold left over from casting a crown in dental school, that's about it.
So this is probably a great point in the episode to say, okay, we've talked about some of the first stop. If you want to take a break, come back for the rest of this episode, because this is going to be a longer episode. Now is a good stopping point, because this is where we got to start talking about Holsinger, about why I think it's important for people to start looking at retirement. And you've touched on some things with that you're already doing, and that's awesome. And Payman, you know, I think you are identical to probably the majority of listeners out there right now, in that they are sitting there going, I have $250,000 in debt, $400,000 student loans, or $300,000, whatever it is, okay, how the heck can I even
think about
saving for retirement? Now, the first thing we got to talk about is compounding interest, okay?
Okay.
Do you know, I'm sure you know about compounding interest, but I'm going to ask you a simple question. All right, Payman, if I give you two options, okay, I can give you $1 million today, or I'm going to give you a penny that doubles every day for 30 days. You can have the sum of the penny double it for 30 days at the end of 30 days, or you can have $1 million. Which one are you going to take?
$1 million.
Okay. What if I told you that penny that doubled every day for 30 days is worth $10.7 million?
After 30 days?
After 30 days.
Well, like in a realistic world?
No, like a penny double. If I give you a penny.
Uh-huh.
Tomorrow, that penny is worth 2 pennies.
Uh-huh.
The following day, that penny is worth 4 pennies.
Correct.
The following day, that penny is worth 8 pennies. Mm-hmm. Okay? At 30 days, it's worth $10.7 million.
That doesn't add up.
Yes, it does.
It does?
Yes.
$10.7 million from a penny?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So is that what's called compound interest?
That's what compound interest
that's
is.
It. Yeah.
It's the most. Boom. It's phenomenal. And everybody's like, what the heck right now? They're all Googling a penny doubled 30 days and seeing, checking my facts. But it's 10. I just told you what it was.
I thought you were checking again.
Is that day 30? Is that day 30 or day 31 though?
No, that's day 30.
So day 31 would be 20 million.
But the way I was answering your question was like, the $1 million you give me in 30 days, I will have $10 million. Well, not necessarily.
Say that again?
Like, I was thinking of, if I get the money right now and work with it, I could get a whole lot more with it. Now, not of course in 30 days, but down the road.
So
I love the cash right now more than...
Well, and so I see what you're talking about, because cash flow is huge, is important.
Yeah.
But the point of the whole story is to say, okay, if you don't start saving now, you never have the opportunity, because what I would encourage people to look at is go look at how the penny a day doubled, whatever, looks out over the amount of days. Mm-hmm. Because at day 15, the penny is only worth $155. So the penny doesn't start to really grow until you get into like the 20s.
Sure.
Your investments and retirement the same way. If you don't start until you pay off your loans in 10 years or you have enough money, you only get so many years for the money to double. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And so even though it may seem like you have so much money right now or so much debt that you can't start
saving.
You feel like you can't start saving, but you need to diversify and like be paying down your debt, but also like doing other investments in the fact that.
Now, but how would you know that the investment that you do with all these people attacking and approaching you wanting to do these retirements? Because there are so many options out there.
Yes.
And then I'm like, I don't want to make a decision on not knowing, like with me and everything, like I want to know so much about it. And I'm like, I can't spend my life right now studying.
No. And so what I tell people is, I'm like, I think as professionals, okay, we should take one book a year to read one financial book.
For sure.
Okay. Yes. To learn something.
Great idea.
And then you need to spend some time on the White Coat Investor or something like this where you can, because I don't care if you don't want to have anything to do with it. Like I enjoy it, right? So like I learn about student loans. I don't have student loans, but like I enjoy learning about it. Well, if you're one of those people, like my dad, for instance, wants nothing to do with it, at least spend the right amount of money to find the right person to help guide you along.
Okay.
You know, so you need to spend the time to find somebody to do that. Don't just pick the next guy that walks in that has a good speech. You know, make sure that like, you kind of agree with his philosophy on how he wants your money to grow. And so, my big thing is, okay, the reason I ask is, so you got the, so we have people out here who have student loans. Mm-hmm. They're freaked out about that. I can think of name, just people in my head, $350,000 in loans. And you're like, I can't even think about retirement. If you wait to pay off that 300, if you wait 10 years to start saving retirement, you will never have as much money as the guy who's in your position that starts saving for retirement now and doesn't overpay on his loans. Okay.
So just keep my 20 years that I have right now and start saving that money that I was going to, for example, pay extra on my loan. Just keep it steady because I've already fixed. It's not going to go up.
Right. Yep.
But instead of that money that I was going to pay for the loan, keep it in a retirement plan.
So there's a balance to this.
Okay.
So I'm going to post an article on here that talks about paying your student loans down versus investing, okay, from the White Coat Investor. And it depends on kind of what your savings are, okay, because the first thing everybody wants to do, and they always do this, is, okay, well, my interest rate's 6.8%, right, Olsinger?
Oh, yeah.
And so you're like, I don't want to – I can't get guaranteed 6.8% in the market, so well, that's a better deal. And the argument, though, is it has less to do with the rate, okay, and more to do with the time period because your backdoor or your Roth IRA has a $50, $100 cap. So if you don't start to do that until you're 35 or 36 or 37 – you just missed out on 4 or 5 years and you can't make that up down the road because you can't, it's capped, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like that's years of compounding that you just missed out on, you know, just to pay down. So you didn't pay $30,000 more in interest or something like that. And so the first thing that he says to do is that if you have gross loans, okay, and we're going to call gross like 8% and up, okay, 8% and up loans, whether that's credit card debt, you know, car, I don't know, anything that's that are higher, you pay that first. You need to pay that down.
Okay.
Okay. If it's seven, 8% or better or below, then what he suggests is you pay, you know, the first thing you do is you should be maxing out a Roth IRA. Okay. And what a Roth IRA payment is it's tax free money. Okay. So it means you pay the tax now and invest the money. So the money, when it grows and you take it out, you don't have to pay taxes on it.
So like right now, for example, say if you make just numbers, $200,000 a year, then you select 20 grand of that year that you were going to put on your student loans. You're going to keep that $20,000 and put it on Roth IRA.
So you're going to put $5,500 because that's as much as you can put in an Roth IRA.
That's if
you can only put $5,500 in a year. That's why it's important to start doing it now because you can't in 10 years, if you're making $1 million a year, you can't just put more money in a Roth IRA.
So it's because it's $5,500
max. Because it's
capped. And is that going to change next year or whoever presidency?
Nope, that's kind of a pretty much a deal.
$5,500 bucks.
Yeah.
And $5,500 is basically the highest it's ever been. It was lower than that previously.
And some people are,
doesn't get taxed.
Some smart asses right now are going, where you can't put $5,500 in a Roth IRA if you make more than 180 grand as a family or 120 as a single. Well, you would have to do what's called a backdoor Roth IRA. So the government has put a cap, okay, to discourage a high income earner like yourself to utilize a Roth IRA. So you can't directly contribute to the Roth IRA directly. You follow me?
Yes.
So you have. So there's just it's a little loophole that you have to go around and do. Okay. You still should be doing it. Okay.
I see.
After that, the next thing is your 401k. And if you're a medical or a dental that's in a job and you have a match, basically, that's actually the first thing you should take advantage of before the Roth, is you always want to utilize whatever your match is. So if a company is going to, and what I mean,
then, corporates do.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So if they're going to match whatever, you know, the first $2,000 or 3%, whatever that you need to do, that's 100% guaranteed. That's free freaking money, people. So make sure you take the match.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Then you go to the Roth and then you come back to the 401k. Okay, because a 401k is tax deferred. So what that means is you get to write that off your taxes. Okay. So you got 20 grand, you made 200 grand this year, you got 20 grand that you're either deciding, am I going to pay my student loans down with this or am I going to save for retirement? Mm-hmm. Okay, what I would tell you to do is you're going to, you don't have a match because you're, sure, you're your own person. Yeah. You're going to put $5,500 in a backdoor Roth IRA.
Yeah.
You should put $3,500 in HSA. Okay, you'll have to go listen to episode 3 sure, for that. Okay.
Yeah.
And then you're going to put probably the remaining into a 401k that you set up for your office.
Okay.
Because then you get to write. So if that comes out to be 15 grand or, mm-hmm, or let's just say 12 grand, then that's 12 grand that you get to write off your taxes. So
wow, that's good.
Not only are you saving for retirement.
Right. You're also taking out.
You're also taking out some taxes, yeah, and you're still paying down your student loans.
What about these kids that are getting out of school and going to corporate and they're being offered that match 401k? Would you recommend that to them even though they know they're not going to stay there more than 6 months or a year or 2 years?
Because you take the, because that goes with you.
Okay, so that's my
that's
thing.
Your money.
I should have done it.
Yes.
I didn't know.
Oh, famous.
Should have called, me. Yeah,
I need to go get another one.
Better call Soli.
So you definitely, that's a great question though. Wherever you have a 401k, that's your money. So when you leave, you can take that with you. So you get to either move it into wherever you move or you can transfer into an IRA. Without capitalized. Cool. And we'll talk about more about the backdoor Roth IRA later because there are some caveats to that.
Mm-hmm. Where do we get more info? I guess the white coat investor.
Dude, he literally has all this, this stuff. So you can live there. Now you have, so then the question becomes, you know, people are talking about the interest rates. Okay, well, this is the, I got, what's my rate versus the market versus that? And again, I think it's a big part of this is making you start to save because you need the compounding, because you need the years, especially in something like a Roth IRA where there are contribution limits. Okay. Because mm-hmm, in a 401k, if you're a sole proprietor or LLC and you have your own solo 401k, you can contribute like 54 grand a year. So you can catch up easier in that.
Okay.
But you can't on these cap limits. Now, the final thing I kind of want to touch on this is the psychological aspect.
Whoa. Wow.
So psychologically, Holsinger, you want to pay down your student loans.
Yes.
So I want you to walk me through your thought process because there's a lot of people in your same boat. And yeah, I don't have them. So like it's easier for me to tell you what you should do because the math works. But I need you to tell me.
How did you get all this information from? From the white coat investor? Like,
yeah,
some people that want to
Google.
Because that's the thing. If we do, so what's the first book we're going to choose this year that we're going to do financially?
That's a good question. We should think of one.
I want to pick one right now. What's the elementary, immediate, the financial?
Go read The White Coat Investor.
White Coat Investor for Dummies.
That's a good book.
Okay. I have it on Kindle already. I haven't read, more than the first 10 pages because he was talking about his stuff about,
You should read it. It's a good book. Holsinger, tell me that for real.
So the reason why I thought about trying to pay off my student loans is the way I look at, my mortgage on my house, 4%. And it's actually a condo. And so my plan for that place is I'm living there right now. Eventually I want to get into house to raise a family and have more room. But I want to keep that current property and rent it out. I mean, it's close to a bunch of colleges here in Nashville. So keep that long term, keep it to pay the rent, pay the note. And so have that as a long term investment in that aspect. So it's 4% there. So I'm not going to plan on paying that down or anything like that. If I get a practice note that's at 4 or 5%, whatever the going rate is here in the next couple of months, whenever I get that mm-hmm, completed, that will be a lower rate than what my student loans are. So by looking at my student loans, it's my highest rate, my highest debt, and debt rate. So putting money towards that in that aspect. Now, if I have a 401k, which I'm not eligible now right now because I'm an associate, then I would start putting money in a 401k. But right now, currently, I just don't have that extra cash flow or extra avenues set up to put money in. So that's why I want to pay off my student loans, just to be done with it and not worry about that anymore.
Well, and so I do think what you're doing is a good plan, right? Like you're maxing out your Roth IRA, you're getting the thing that's capped, you're maxing mm-hmm, out your HSA this year, and then you're paying down more loans. I don't have a problem with that because 6.8%, no one's ever going to make someone punish somebody for taking that guaranteed rate. So I don't have a problem with that. My thing is I want people to understand the power of compounding interest. Mm-hmm. And I want them to understand that there's some things that are capped that you can't catch up on. And so it's important to take advantage of those.
Now, if I would have got out of dental school 20 years ago and my rate was 3% of my student loans, I would not pay them off.
Yeah, but my point to you, though, is like, and I'm going to post a couple graphs on the website that talk about this, but even if you took an interest rate that's the exact same, you need to do the math, because if you miss out on early compounding years, you lose money. Okay, so let's take an example. Let's say you have, let's say your loan payment's $1,000 a month.
Okay.
Okay, and you have $2,000 extra a month that you're gonna put somewhere. You can either, we're gonna assume you're already doing your Roth IRA and HSA, which is great. You're gonna either put this in a 401k, or you're gonna put this, pay this down your loans. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If we'll say you pay off your loans and it takes you like 2 or 3 years, okay, versus like 10 years of letting a loan go to maturation. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. It takes 40 years for, and we're saying that after you pay off your loans, you're going to take that, all that money that you were paying it down with, including the principal, and invest that. Okay.
Okay.
You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
It takes 40 years for that number to catch the one that started investing earlier.
Yeah. I think my problem is after doing the Roth IRA, doing the HSA, if I don't have a 401k, so I can't contribute to that, where do I invest that money?
Well, that's a good point. If you don't have a 401k, then you're better off paying down your loans.
Yeah. But if I have a 401k set up, then like, yes, I understand like putting that towards that aspect.
Because it's important for people to realize, like, we want to take advantage of tax advantage accounts. So like, I'm not saying that you should go put it in the stock market. It's like a taxable account.
Yeah, that didn't go over too well for me. I got two stocks that aren't doing too great. So hopefully they'll come around. It's always it's not the amount you have or the time, or what is it? Not the amount or how long or what your return is. It's how long you're in the market, right? Is that what they all say?
It is.
Yeah.
No, but I'm serious. Well, unless it never comes up.
So listen, we don't really care about stocks or making money immediately. We're talking long-term goals.
Exactly. And these funds, we're talking about Roth IRAs, 401ks, you can't get these into these till they're 60.
What if some dentists don't want to think about their 10, 15, 20 years down the road? They just want to think about right now. And they want to, instead of investing in that Roth 401k or whatever they want to do, they want to invest in something that they want to get quicker return. Do you have anything for them?
No.
That they want something quick and want it fast.
Here's what I think. I think you know, ultimately we're trained to be dentists.
Right.
So first off, for us, we should be dentists. We should be good dentists. Okay. You know, I don't think we should be, I think that I personally have a pretty conservative basis in retirement and how I want to save and do it. And it works. You know, if you start saving now payment in these funds and just mutual funds with maxing a 401k and IRA, that sort of thing, you will have more money than you know what to do with in 30 years. Okay. If you just keep paying down your loans for the next 10 years and don't save for retirement, I'm going to have more money than you will ever imagine, more than you in 30 years, because you just can't catch up if you wait that long.
Sure.
Now, if we're talking about,
but, I mean, 30 years is too long to me. Like, I want 10 years.
I know, but
like,
you got
to be 40 or 35, 40.
Yeah, but you're going to make that doing what you do.
But because, okay, you know what I mean? Like, I want quick. I want it now.
Millennial.
Millennial, no, microwave.
But at the same time,
I'll be happy if I live 45 to be 45. You're talking about 60. What am I going to do with all the money?
Rebel vodka. You're going to not, you can retire earlier than that. But you need to be.
It's true.
And this all goes down to why I don't think you should be. I'm an advocate of not paying your. Now, if we're talking like Holsinger's position, where it's like, okay, I want to pay off these loans in 2 or 3 years, that's fine. Okay, I don't have a huge problem, because the grand scheme of things, like, you're going to pay them off that quick, that you're going to save, that's great. My thing is that I think that a lot of people aggressively try to pay down their student loans. Uh-huh. And then when they get them done, they think, I've done it. I've paid off my loans. Now I'm going to be a rich dentist. And so they go out and buy a car, a sweet house, a boat, take extreme vacations, you name it.
Yeah.
But what they don't do is take all that money that they've been putting towards their student loans and start putting it towards retirement. Okay. If you start saving for retirement now, then in 10 years, if you still have a student loan, you're still going to be paying it. So, but you're still saving. It forces you to save.
Yeah, it does forces you to save.
And that's
so. It puts you in a rhythm. It's kind of like a game plan.
Exactly. And so I hate seeing people not like think that they're going to just pay this down. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, great. If you're 35 or 40 years old and you have no student loans, okay, but you have nothing in retirement, where are you at? Like, I'd rather have $2 million in the bank and $1 million of student loans than have no money in the bank and no student loans.
Correct.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, it's not that big of a discrepancy, but the point is that if you don't start to look at that and have that conversation, and I'm not advocating a total non-pay down your loans. I'm just saying that people need to be saving for retirement.
And I'm advocating, and I'm agree with you, but like paying down your highest like percentage on your loan first. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, so whatever loan you have that's the highest percentage.
Well, you should
like,
refinance them.
Yeah, you can refinance it and get it there. Yeah, you're right. But like the rate difference really wasn't that much difference. So, but you shouldn't neglect saving the payoff something. I agree with that 100%.
And that's just huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that make sense, Payman?
What about one of the things that I always thought of? Because a lot of my friends, when we all got out, they started into real estate investing. And some of the loopholes that they wanted to go, instead of doing the Roth 401k and all that, and they wanted to just build, like get, what about those? Like, what about people that want to do adventure?
So my problem is, okay, that's fine, but like you were specifically, you spent a lot of money to be trained as a professional to do something really well.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some people that are going to be successful doing something like that, and that's great. But I think that's a small percentage.
Okay.
And I know a dentist that's actually, I mean, he's probably like 60, or in his upper 50s, and like he did that. He invested in real estate investing. That's what he did. And like he was going to retire, but then like I mean, he hit that bubble, and then. And now he had to go, and he was going to retire, and then he had to go back to work. Maybe we can get on the podcast. Maybe he'll open up about it, kind of tell us about
well,
it.
Well, I think a lot of dentists will talk about how they, you know, messed around with stocks. I mean, like, I know my dad used to do some day trading back in the early 2000s and whatnot, because people like, what's the fun? And, but again, you were trained to do, you know what you really do really good? Implants. You can make a lot of money doing a lot of implants.
We could bring in actually some even young dentists that have had the opportunity to invest in real estate that they could tell us about their experience. Like I mean, some of the people in your class, 2010-11 graduated, I know that they have five houses in Nashville and they don't have much money.
But remember too though, this though, that like right now is a great time to be doing real estate, right? Like name a real estate agent that's not making money. I mean, right? Like,
I might get into real estate right now, just on the side on the weekends.
And that's the thing. But at some point, that's going to stop.
Sure.
And if you miss it, okay, if you miss the crash, at the same time, you could have just been placing a lot of implants and focusing your time on your dentistry, totally buying another practice.
Sure.
And so that's my whole kind of.
And it's true. And then what I mean, all of these ideas and things that I'm mentioning is not really. I'm thinking out loud for a lot of people that are listening. Maybe it's going through their head. They know somebody that doing that.
Definitely,
So I'm all with you. I mean, I love this. I'm very encouraged to actually start reading some of the stuff about financial. That's one area that I'm very weak at, financial and refinancing loans. I mean, I don't even know some of this stuff, but I love to.
And you're going
to
have so many buddies and friends who are probably already trying to come in there and want to be your advisor, your stuff.
Right.
And I don't know odds are you are probably, I mean, and no offense to I think there's some good financial advisors out there and whatnot. But my point is like none of them had to go through 4 years of school and 900 hours of CE and all this stuff to learn what they do. Okay. So you are very highly skilled. You can take the time to read a couple books to figure out how to make the right decision to pick the right person.
I will say one thing I've just had so many people knocking down my door. And right when you graduate dental school, like all of a sudden people are calling, like, I mean, they're finding you LinkedIn or sending you text messages or whatever. And they're showing up at your office saying they're your friend.
Right.
And then I had my front desk person come up to me in the back one time and say like, hey, your friend Gene is out here. And I go, I'm in the middle of like an MOD on a patient with no overhead lighting in this office. And I just look up and I'm like, it's swamped. And I look up and I'm like, Gene? Like,
don't know Gene.
Like, I don't think I know Gene. And so the girl I worked at the front desk just says, oh, it sounds like you're a really good friend. You don't even know your friend's name. And then like walks off. And I'm the associate there, so I can't really do much. You know what I mean? And so I'm like, so then I got curious. I was like,
you gotta go spank Gene.
Yeah, I gotta go see Gene. Yeah, and go see Gene. Spanker.
Gene's not the staff member.
Oh, she's not.
Gene was the friend.
Oh, okay.
I think it was Gene.
We're not advocating spanking staff members.
No, no spankings.
I love it. So point being, though, is be careful who you deal with. All right, we're butting up against the wall here on another great, fun episode of The Millennial Dentist. In summary, I'll kind of say this. Student loans are there. You need to figure out, take the time to figure it out. Go check out the White Coat Investor. I think it's the best thing we can kind of really advocate. You need to realize that saving is important. Don't neglect saving for retirement to pay down student loans. Mm-hmm. That's kind of my thoughts. Any other thoughts from y'all?
Definitely.
No, I'm happy. I honestly learned a lot just tonight from the save. I mean, everybody talks to me like we talked about. Like, we don't know. We don't
trust. Oh, yeah, definitely.
But it's good because it came from you, and also you've done your research and you've seen it works. Sure. I mean, just the numbers, mathematical, it works. So I'm going to start thinking about it more. I'm going to move to that direction.
Do you have any questions or thoughts to kind of after thinking about this?
No, I'm sure when I start looking. See, my thing is I wish I have somewhere to look at, like if I want to have questions, somebody that would not benefit me per se.
And his name's Sully.
Well, and me, but that's why all I do is like read the White Coat Investor, because this guy has no dog in the fight, right?
Sure.
Like he's a physician. He doesn't care. He's just doing this to like help other people. Now he makes money on the site. I mean, he's very clear about that and open about that. But the point is that like if you have a topic that you're concerned about, just type it in there and check it out. I mean, like you got a forum, blog post, I mean, the whole nine yards where like there's nothing that has to do anything with student loans, retirement, disability insurance, life insurance, all that sort of stuff that you can't find there. That is, and it's a non, you know, judging third party. Sure.
No, that's awesome. Well, thanks for having us. Thanks for this episode. I'm happy and excited, and I'm going to go find a book to read, Financial, this 2017.
Whoop, whoop. And if anybody has any more questions, you can send it to the, what should we call this? The Millennial Dentist Mailbag?
Or the Millennial Mailbag.
Millennial Mailbag. Yeah.
Thanks, Corey. Hopefully we answered your question and you kind of feel a little more enlightened about it. And we look forward to more questions.
Yes.
Until next time, everybody work smarter.
Not harder.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.